It's Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan. Sports Radio 101.9 FM and Sports Radio 66, WFAN and WFAN-FM, New York.
Hey, good morning, and welcome to Talking Golf with Ann Liguori on this Sunday morning, July 24th. How are we doing this morning? If you're heading to play some golf today, I see that the temperatures are heading up into the high 90s. So hydrate, and hydrate often. Talking Golf with Ann Liguori is brought to you by iBeCool Luxury Athleisure Apparel for Men and Women, featuring the exclusive ice fill cooling technology along with SPF 50 plus sun protection. Visit ibkul.com to learn more. Whew, just back from a golf trip to Ireland and Northern Ireland. Got back late last night. And boy, the golf in Donegal and in Northern Ireland is plentiful and inspiring. Both the Parkland courses and the Lynx courses. And we played the beautiful Parkland course at Slieve Russell Hotel. And further north up in Northern Ireland, we visited Galgorm Castle Resort, played their course, which will host the ISPS Handa World Invitational in August, which is a co-sanctioned tournament with both the European PGA Tour and the European LPGA. But the Lynx courses are my favorite. And we played a Northwest Golf Club in County Donegal, which I loved. We played St. Patrick's, which is the new Tom Doak design at Rosapenna, also in Donegal, which is getting a lot of attention. And we played the majestic Port Stewart Golf Links in Northern Ireland. Absolutely spectacular, meandering through high dunes and beautiful views of the Atlantic Ocean. And do you know that one-third of the world's links courses are in Ireland? One-third! And delighted to say that the weather was really, really incredible. The first day, it was 88 degrees, which was a record high in Ireland. And, you know, you watch the news, and that was the story. The unusually high temperatures dominating the news headlines. And the rest of the week, the temperatures got back to the norm at this time, which is in the 60s. And we did hit some rain at Northwest, but that didn't damper the day. I mean, it's just such a classic Lynx layout. And the rest of the week, we really didn't have much rain, which was amazing. Later in the show, we're going to visit with veteran golf writer Scott Michaud of Global Golf Post. And he writes also for the Irish Times. We'll get his perspective on some of the courses we played. And we're going to weigh in on the LIV Golf discussion, because coming up this week, LIV Golf is coming to Trump National Golf Club, Bedminster in New Jersey. That's July 29th through the 31st. So we'll talk about that in a second. But, you know, people ask me what my favorite golf course is. You know, where in the world do you love to play? And I keep going back to Ireland because, you know, I've spent a lot of time there taping television shows, radio shows on many Lynx courses and Parkland courses throughout the Republic of Ireland and Northern Ireland. And, you know, I've showcased both the hidden gems, which aren't really that hidden anymore because more and more people have discovered these hidden gems. And I've also done a lot of shows on some of their most well-known courses. And just when you think you've played the most stunning, interesting course, you travel to the next course in Ireland and you play just another beauty. So I always say the best golf that I've experienced, you know, checking all the boxes, scenery, inspiring, challenging, and obviously the people are so hospitable. I'd say the golf in Ireland, and love Scotland too, but Ireland really stole my heart years ago. And of course, while we were on this golf trip in Ireland, more LIV golf news broke. Henrik Stenson is the latest defector, announcing this past Wednesday that he will join LIV Golf. He is out as Ryder Cup captain for the European team. He posted a statement on his Twitter account saying that LIV Golf officials worked with him to ensure he could fulfill his Ryder Cup obligations, but Ryder Cup Europe would not allow that. He was supposed to captain the Ryder Cup Europe team next September when it will be played at Marco Simone Golf and Country Club outside of Rome, Italy. He said he disagreed with their decision that he could no longer captain the Ryder Cup team, but he has accepted it. He won the Open Championship back in 2016. His last of six PGA Tour titles was in 2017 at the Wyndham Championship. And Stenson is currently ranked 171 in the world. So obviously, he has not won in a long time. So perhaps he figured he would take the cash that the Saudis are offering. I heard it was around $40 million that they offered him to join LIV Golf. But man, he signs a contract to become Ryder Cup captain. Then he just kind of goes back on his word, right? He said he was going to stay, you know, loyal to the Ryder Cup and to his duties contractually. And now you hear that he is going to play this week in the LIV Golf. And hey, money talks, right? And the agents of the players are really pushing LIV Golf on many of these players because they're making more money as well. So gone from the European Ryder Cup team so far are Paul Casey, Sergio, Ian Poulter, who was Mr. Ryder Cup himself. Always loved seeing Ian Poulter play Ryder Cup. The guy has an incredible Ryder Cup history. And Lee Westwood, they're out. Stenson already lost a sponsor on his decision to join LIV Golf. Mutual of Omaha ended their endorsement deal with him pretty quickly after the announcement was made. So Ryder Cup Europe is looking for a new captain. There are a couple of names being thrown about. Thomas Bjorn, Luke Donald, Paul Lowry, Robert Carlson. Look, it is such an honor, in my opinion, to serve as a captain of a Ryder Cup team and to play on a Ryder Cup team. But it has really been thrown into chaos because so many of these players are taking the money over playing for their country in this historic competition between the U.S. and Europe that has gone back to 1927. Other players who joined LIV Golf that were announced this week, Jason Kokrak and Charles Howell III. So you know my feelings by now on this. I am personally disgusted by the players who are going for the money grab. And, you know, most of us here in New York and throughout the country lived through the horrors of 9/11. And many of our friends have family members who perished in these tragedies. So I know personally I will never forget. And the president of 9/11 Justice wrote a letter to former President Trump urging him to cancel the event at Trump National. And, you know, I do agree with these family members. To have this tournament in the shadows of Ground Zero in New Jersey or anywhere, quite frankly, is unacceptable to me. I have no respect for any of these players who are jumping to LIV Golf to take the Saudi money. Not a care in the world as to where the money is coming from and how the Saudis are trying to buy golf. And, you know, they talk about hypocrisy with the PGA Tour. Well, how is this league, LIV Golf, growing the game? They're really dividing the game. And I know Trump criticized the PGA Tour on his social media account, told the players to take the money now, saying those who stay loyal to the very disloyal PGA and all of its different forms will pay a big price when the inevitable merger with LIV Golf comes, says Trump. Trump has been upset at the PGA of America moving the 2022 PGA Championship out of his club, which was supposed to be at Bedminster, after the riots on the Capitol in January. And then, of course, years before, the PGA Tour also took the WGC tournament from Trump's Doral Golf Resort property and moved that event to Mexico. So Trump is siding with LIV Golf. In addition to Henrik Stenson going to LIV, broadcaster David Faraday has jumped to LIV. And they are trying to lure Charles Barkley, who is trying to keep his current TV job in addition to working with LIV Golf. So that will be interesting. Charles looking for the big payday as well. I know I've read where LPGA Commissioner Molly Marcos-Simon said that when and if Greg Norman from LIV were to call the LPGA regarding LIV Golf getting involved in the women's game, she would take the call. She told the London Times that it's her responsibility to evaluate every opportunity. She said there would need to be input from the players and the sponsors, and there are a lot of factors to consider before she would do business with LIV Golf. Golf Saudi already backs 6 events on the Ladies European Tour, and apparently the prize money is 3 to 4 times what it is on the European LPGA Tour. So we will continue the discussion on LIV Golf with Scott Michaud of Global Golf Post at about 7:40 this morning. And boy, what camp are you siding with? The traditional camp, who want the PGA Tour and the LPGA Tour to stay intact? Or are you in favor of LIV Golf and all it stands for, and perhaps justify this new opportunity for golfers? Either way, it's created quite the disruption in our sport, and it cannot be good for the sport. Talent pools are being depleted. Still, when you watch golf, you want to see the best players in the game playing against each other, not only in the majors. And I feel the PGA Tour certainly still has the best players in the game, but, you know, they're losing very compelling personalities in Phil, Bryson DeChambeau, and others. It looks like more players will take the leap. And there are rumors going around that Open champion Cameron Smith may take the leap. So that will be interesting to see. I hope it's not so. I have so enjoyed watching Cameron Smith. He shot a 64 to edge out Cameron Young by 1 shot last Sunday at the Open Championship. We were talking about that last Sunday. He's just brilliant. He doesn't miss a putt when he's on. He's so good to watch. And reports say, now, you know, who knows what is true and what is not. We will certainly find out. But reports have LIV Golf offering Cameron Smith $90 million to jump ship. DJ was reportedly getting $125 million. Bryson DeChambeau, $100 million. Phil, a reported $200 million. So it remains a big topic in our sport. Let's move on to the Evian Championship in France, the 4th major on the women's calendar. Brooke Henderson at 17-under holds a 2-shot lead over So-Yeon Ryu after posting a round of 68. Brooke Henderson set a major championship record with back-to-back 64s in the first 2 rounds. Incredible. Henderson is looking for her first major title since 2016. Nelly Korda, she shot an even par 71. She had 4 bogeys yesterday. That dropped her into a tie for 6th place, 6 shots back. Sophia Schubert, the 2017 U.S. Women's Amateur Champion, is in 3rd place. The Senior Open for the men at Glen Eagles in Scotland is going on. Paul Broadhurst and Darren Clark are tied for the lead at 9-under. Stephen Alker and Jerry Kelly are 1 shot back at 8-under. And Padraig Harrington joins several others 3 shots back. That should be starting any second. And there is a Senior LPGA Championship happening at Salina Country Club in Kansas. Carrie Webb at 9-under. She is 2 shots ahead of Annika Sorenstam. Carrie Webb shot a bogey-free 6-under 66 yesterday. I love seeing these senior women going at it as well. In the PGA Tour, the 3M Open at TPC Twin Cities in Minnesota, Scott Piercy is 18-under, leads Emiliano Grillo by 4 shots. Doug Gim and Tony Finau are 5 shots back. Piercy set a 3M Open 54-hole tournament record and is looking for his 5th career PGA Tour win. And we talked about this last Sunday, the USGA's first U.S. Adaptive Open. Congratulations to the winners. We had previewed it with longtime adaptive golfer and advocate Tracy Raymond last Sunday. And we talked about Chad Pfeiffer. He won the men's category, leg and pyramid category. Kim Moore won for the women in that category. Chad Pfeiffer, boy, he wins a lot of tournaments, very high-profile celebrity events that he plays in. I've interviewed him before. He just has an incredible story. He served our country in the Army, and he's really lucky to be alive as he got hit by an IED in Iraq and lost his leg, and he wears a prosthetic leg. And he has said on numerous occasions that golf has saved his life. He said there were so many times where he was so depressed and just couldn't get off the sofa, and that golf really has motivated him, and he's a real hero, Chad Pfeiffer. And he won the leg impairment category at the U.S. Adaptive Open. Jordan Thomas and Cindy Lawrence won in the multiple limb amputee category. Kip Popert of England and Ryan Jackson of the U.S. won in the neurological impairment category. Dennis Walters. Many of you have heard of Hall of Famer Dennis Walters, who has really traveled around the country doing inspirational golf clinics and trick shot shows with his dog. Dennis Walters won a lot of junior championships in New Jersey in the 60s and 70s, but then he was paralyzed in a golf cart accident. He became a wheelchair golfer and had a customized golf cart made for him. And he won in the seated players category. And Annie Hayes won the women's division in the seated players category. Now, the overall winners, they had an overall winner in the men and women's categories as well. Simon Lee, a 25-year-old from South Korea, he was diagnosed with autism at the age of 3. He won the overall men's division. And 41-year-old Kim Moore, born without a right foot and a clubbed left foot, she won the women's division by 7 strokes. And she played college golf at the University of Indianapolis. And boy, how great these adaptive players are. And they have a USGA national championship now to compete in, something that they have been working toward and dreaming about for a long time. So congratulations to all the players. All right, we're going to take a quick break and come back. And, you know, with all this talk of LIV Golf, the big disruptor in the game of golf, it's settling to go back and talk about two of the game's most iconic stars, Arnold Palmer and Jack Nicklaus, and Charles Meacham, whom I've known for a long time since his years as the LPGA commissioner, and he was an advisor to both Arnold Palmer and Jack Nicklaus. He wrote a book called Arnie and Jack, Stories of My Long Friendship with Two Remarkable Men. I'll play my conversation with Charles Meacham in a few minutes. But first, let me tell you that iBeCool luxury athleisure wear for both men and women offers the highest performance-driven apparel to look and feel your best on and off the course. iBeCool offers multifunctional, intelligent, the exclusive moisture sensor fabric featuring the IceField technology that cools your body so you can stay comfortable and odor-free on hot and humid days. iBeCool apparel also features UPF 50 plus sun protection, colorful, stylish, ultra-soft fabric with the latest technology to protect your skin. Look and feel your best. Learn more at ibkul.com.
Did you have a dream last night? If not, are you sure?
Everyone dreams for about 2 hours per night.
We just don't have the tape recorder running.
Do pilots get jet lag? Are we ever going to get a hangover cure? Did the dinosaurs have feathers?
They had feathers.
Figured I'd give you that one. My name is Mike Simpson. This is what we do on my podcast. It's called I've Got Questions. Chameleons are not what you think. Beer used to be a drink at breakfast. Let's learn some stuff. New episodes Thursdays. I've Got Questions on Odyssey or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan.
My guest is Charles Meacham, the author of Arnie and Jack, Stories of My Long Friendship with Two Remarkable Men. And Charles Meacham and I go way back to your LPGA commissioner days, Charles, and I'm just so delighted you're on the show. Welcome to Talkin' Golf.
Well, Ann, it's really a pleasure to be with you again. I remember those days quite well. We had a lot of fun at the LPGA, and you were part of a lot of it.
Well, you have had such an incredible career as an attorney for a major law firm in Cincinnati, Ohio, and I'm a Buckeye myself. I was born in Cincinnati and grew up in Brecksville, Ohio, outside
really?
Of Cleveland. Yeah. And then I remember when you were an attorney for Taft Broadcasting.
Right.
And a commissioner for the LPGA and an advisor to both Arnold Palmer and Jack Nicklaus. So as Jack has said in the foreword of the book, there isn't a person who knows more about Arnold or Jack than Charles Meacham.
Probably right.
So talk about, who did you meet first? Was it Arnie or Jack?
No, I met Jack in 1950. God knows, more than 50 years ago. And I was a CEO of Tap Broadcasting, and we were building a golf course on land near an amusement park that we had built north of Cincinnati, Kings Island. And Jack built the course. It was a public course, and he did a fabulous job. So I got to know him then. And then after that, we did a lot of deals together, including my company filmed and distributed the Golf My Way video, which I think is still maybe the best ever. And then we did a lot of other deals over the years. With Arnie, I got to know Arnie during my LPGA days. He'd come out to tournaments and played in some of the mixed events. But then the last event of my LPGA tenure was at PGA West, and we were not far from there, living in the desert. And I went down to wish Jack and Arnie well. They were playing together in a team event. And Arnie said, hey, I've been meaning to call you. Could we have a beer after my round? And I said, well, yeah. So we did that. And typical Arnie, we sit down at the table. He buys me a beer and one for himself. And then he says, I want you to come in and run all my companies. And I just about fell off the chair. But to make a long story short, I wasn't able to be a full-time person with him because I had other commitments in Cincinnati. But I was able, and he and I are together, we're able to work out an arrangement where I became a consultant and shared an office with him. And my wife, Marilyn, and I moved to Bay Hill. And so that started a long friendship and a close friendship until he died.
Wow. To be that close as an advisor to both Jack Nicklaus and Arnold Palmer, two of the greatest icons in golf, Charles, is quite special.
Yeah. I never took it for granted. Every day that I was with them, I really was conscious of what I was doing and what I was blessed to be part of.
And so how would you describe the key to their success, I guess, individually and then collectively?
Arnie's success, obviously, he was one of the great golfers of all time. But beyond that, I honestly don't think I've ever known anybody with more charisma and more outreach than Arnie. And you know this as well as I do. The galleries loved him. They loved him whether he played well or not. And so although he was a Hall of Fame player, I think charisma was his strongest point. Jack, I think simply the awesome nature of his talent was the thing that I think people really reached out to. He was an unbelievable golfer, and the people argue forever, Ann, about who's the GOAT. But with old timers like me, Jack's the man.
Sure. I mean, 73 PGA Tour titles, 18 majors for Jack Nicklaus. Arnold with 62 titles, 7 majors. Is it fair to say that Jack always wanted Arnold's adoration and Arnie always wanted Jack's records?
I think they, at first, of course, it was a little stressed because Arnie was being challenged by Jack. But as the years went on, and they became genuinely good friends and spent a lot of time off the golf course. Their wives, Winnie and Barb, were extremely close, great admirers of one another. And so it went beyond just golf and became a genuinely personal friendship.
It's very difficult for rivals like that to become such good friends, don't you think? Were you surprised by how close they were and, you know, until the very, very end? I mean, they were just admired each other, respected each other greatly. And as you say, the families really enjoyed each other.
I don't know that I was surprised. I think I was surprised that it happened as soon as it did. But that was the guys. I tell it, one of the stories in my book, and it's under the heading of Oops. Marilyn and I went to dinner one night with Kit, Arnie's second wife, and Arnie at Palmer's Restaurant in La Quinta. And I don't know why I got on the subject of aging and maturing and so on. And I said, you know, I've come to believe that when you have finally matured is when you meet someone who is better at what you do best. And then I thought, oh my God, why did I say that? But Arnie got me right off the hook. He said, yeah, the minute I saw Jack, I knew. So it was that he was, Arnie was, had very little ego. And when he saw somebody who could play better, he acknowledged it. And, you know, the old, what's the old line? And about God appearing in Jack, one of Jack's dreams. And God said, oh, Jack, people really love your golf. You're a great golfer. And Jack is loving this. And then God says, but, you know, they love Arnie more. Arnie just was special, but they became good friends.
And you're right about Arnold's charisma. There was not a more charismatic personality in all of sport. You know, I'm talking right. from Muhammad Ali, who people adored, to, gosh, yeah. Michael Jordan. I mean, Arnold Palmer was the king, literally, in that
exactly
department.
Right. No one came close, in my opinion.
And talk a little bit more about their rivalry. I remember reading where Jack Nicklaus said the rivalry started at a driving contest. He was 18 and he drove it 40 yards past Arnie. Jack said he shot a 63. Arnie shot a 67. He was trying to remember when the rivalry started, and he thought that's when it started. Is that how you understand it? Or
well, you have to, if you had Arnie's version, he would say that he outdrove Jack. That's part of the deal. But yes, I know that situation very well, because it took place at the Athens, Ohio Country Club that Dal Finsterwald, another great golfer, invited Arnie and Jack, and they had not met until then. And so they played, and I'm sure gained a lot of knowledge and respect for one another. But Arnie insisted that he had the longest drive. Jack insisted that he did. So part of the game.
I love it. And tell the story about how when you were trying to get them to design, collaborate on the course design.
This was one of my
World Golf Hall of Fame. This is a fun story.
One of my favorite memories. I had a call one day from Tim Fincham, the commissioner of the PGA Tour. And I remember saying to Tim, this is an historic moment, because I don't remember ever the commissioner of the PGA Tour calling the commissioner of the LPGA and asking for help. And he said, no, he said, I really do need your help. And I said, I'll do what I can. He said, I've been trying to get Arnie and Jack to agree to co-design a golf course at the World Golf Hall of Fame. We'd call it the King and the Bear, and really would be a major thing for the Hall of Fame. So he said, but I can't get them to do it. They keep saying, oh, you know, we have different philosophies. I don't have time and blah, blah, blah. So would you give it a try? Well, I did. Met with Jack two or three times, with Arnie two or three times, and they couldn't get their arms around. They kept saying, well, I'm not sure I've got time and blah, blah, blah. So finally, I had a brainstorm. I was with Jack, and I said, okay, Jack, I give up, but don't complain to me when you have to play the Trevino player course. And he thought, what? What do you mean? And I said, we don't think that Tim's just going to abandon this thought. If you and Jack don't do it, he'll turn to Trevino and player. Oh, my God. Well, I did the same thing with Arnie, and within 3 weeks, spades were in the ground.
Brilliant, brilliant strategy, Charles. I'm talking funny. To Charles Meacham, Arnie and Jack. Stories of My Long Friendship with Two Remarkable Men is the name of this beautiful book. And How would you compare the Arnold-Jack rivalry, Charles, to perhaps Tiger and Phil?
It was fierce. Particularly in the early days, Arnie obviously didn't want to be replaced as the king. And by the way, he never liked to be called the king. I don't know whether you knew that or not. Huh. He always said, Charlie, there is no king of golf. And so he was embarrassed by that. But put that aside for the moment. They were fierce rivals, but they were also extremely sensitive and aware of the other's talent and ability. And I think even in those early days, when there was a lot of ugly comments from Arnie's army, they both respected one another, but they were determined competitors.
And how do you think it was different than Tiger and Phil?
This is a terrible thing to say. I'm not sure that Tiger and Phil were ever that close personally.
Yes.
Maybe they were, but I never had that sense. Arnie and Jack became very close personal friends.
Right. There is an extreme difference just with that. I mean, I think Tiger and Phil tolerate and respect each other, but they aren't chums for sure.
That's exactly the way I feel. And you would know that better than most.
Right. Well, as the former commissioner of the LPGA, Charles, I wanted to ask your opinion about some other subjects. What are your thoughts on women's golf and how far it's progressed since you were commissioner? I mean, boy, they've come a long way just in the last, say, 5 to 10 years.
It's amazing. And the reason is the simple reason: there are more good women players from all over the world playing great golf. And I think there was a time when the language barrier perhaps was an issue. I don't think it's much of an issue now. These ladies can communicate effectively. But it's like anything else, Ann. And the bottom line is talent. And there are simply more talented players from all over the world. And they're getting more and more recognition. And I think that will only continue to grow.
And the prize money has really grown just in the last couple years, which is great.
It has,
and
that will continue to grow as well.
How about your opinions on LIV Golf, Charles Meacham, as far as how much of a threat do you think LIV Golf will be to the PGA Tour?
Well, as an old guy, I'll be 92 years old in another. I'm a traditionalist, and again, I would fall back on my friendship with Jack and Arnie. They love the PGA Tour, and I have no doubt. Well, Jack's already spoken. Arnie would say the same thing. You want to play golf against the greatest players in the world. The money is useful, but it's not important. You all make more money than God. You've all got more money than you ever had. Shouldn't you really want to play to test your talent? Shouldn't you want to play against the greatest players in the world? And to me, that's the biggest negative with the LIV Tour, is you're not playing against the greatest players in the world.
And don't you think legacy and reputation is everything? I asked that question of Rory McIlroy at the U.S. Open, and his answer was yes, and money can't buy legacy and reputation.
Exactly right. And I think that Jack's majors accomplishments mean more to him than any dime he ever made. And with Arnie, he made money, but he made most of his money off the golf course in endorsements. So they both of them played golf because of their respect for the sport and the integrity of the game. And I think that was lost with LIV.
All right, coming up, if you listen to Talking Golf regularly, you already know how I feel about LIV Golf. I'm totally against it. But that being said, I think it is inevitable that the PGA Tour and LIV Golf may have to find a way to work together if that is all possible I mean, there's already so much animosity and bad blood between the two. Scott Michaud of Global Golf Post and the Irish Times, he's going to join me in a few minutes. We'll get his take on the event that is about to ascend on Trump National in Bedminster in New Jersey. Scott also just came back from a golf media trip to Ireland that I was on, so we'll also talk about golf in Ireland. But first, let me tell you that as the brand ambassador for iBeCool, I can attest to the high-quality, performance-driven leisure apparel line that is perfect to wear on and off the course. Not only does the moisture sensor fabric keep me cool on the links, iBeCool garments also feature UPF 50-plus sun protection. All this plus a wide variety of colorful and stylish silhouettes in tops, shorts, pants, skorts, and dresses. And men can choose from any styles as well. Look your best. Protect your skin. Learn more at ibkul.com.
It's Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan.
And welcome back to Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori, brought to you by Johnny O Apparel. East Coast traditional meets West Coast casual, the best of both worlds. Apparel for men and women. Visit www.johnny-o.com to learn more. Imagine if the coastal beauty of Torrey Pines married the classic layout of Wingfoot. Our friends at Johnny O have pretty much done that with apparel. The brand is East Coast classic meets Southern California cool. We love their performance polos for on and off the course. While supplies last, spend $100 on johnny-o.com and get a free Johnny O dop kit, a $68 value and perfect travel companion. Use code WFAN100 on johnny-o.com while supplies last. And joining me now, Scott Michaud, the senior golf writer for Global Golf Post, and he also writes for the Irish Times. And he got back from a golf trip to Ireland that I was also on late last night. So, Scott, thank you so much for getting up early to be on Talking Golf.
Yeah, rolled in about 2 a.m. last night, so, or this morning, sorry. So it's been a short night, but hey, I'm back on Irish time.
I know. It's good to have all this energy in the morning, being, you know, on Irish time, which is 5 hours later than what we have here. But it was such a wonderful golf trip to Ireland and Northern Ireland, you know, playing both links courses and parkland courses. While it's fresh in your mind, what were the highlights for your trip, Scott?
Well, I'm always a fan of the links courses. They always stand out in my mind. And Port Stewart, which we played, the last links course we played, is one of the world's best, and I've always loved it and played it before. But the one that really stood out was the Northwest course that you and I played on together. And it was just terrific. It's one of those things that you stumble upon and you don't expect anything from, and it turns out to be spectacular. And so I really loved that whole vibe at that club, the members, the course, the view, everything about it. And then, of course, we played the brand new one at St. Patrick's at Rosapenna, which is already landed in the world's top 100 and is absolutely spectacular piece of property. And it's really unbelievable.
Absolutely. You know, I love links courses. To me, they're so inspiring, and I normally play better. But my best round from the week was on the parkland beauty at Slieve Russell. It was the first day we were there, you know, so no sleep. You get off the plane, go right to play golf. I shot an 82, and it was 88 degrees, which was certainly one of the hottest days on record in Ireland, right, Scott? I mean, I couldn't believe how hot it was.
It was. You would have thought the world was ending when you talked to the locals there, and I thought, this is just another day in Georgia. So it really is an amazing mindset when you're there. But I couldn't believe I was playing golf in Ireland when it was nearly 90, and that was a beautiful golf course.
Oh my God, it was just so gorgeous with all the flowers, and just, you know, just when you think you've found the most beautiful golf course in Ireland, you just drive maybe 20 minutes down the road and there's another incredible view and golf course. And I enjoyed Northwest as well. They were just so hospitable there, and it was just the classic links layout. Port Stewart in Northern Ireland, the views, you kept saying, because you had played it before and I had never played Port Stewart, and you kept saying, Ann, wait till you see the views from the first tee box. You see the, you know, the coastline and then the Atlantic Ocean and then the high meandering dunes. I mean, it was just spectacular.
Yeah, I've always said the view from the first tee, it's Port Stewart is only exceeded by the view from the second. It really is. That front nine is as good as any links you'll ever play. And that dune you hit straight at off the first tee is the second largest dune apparently in Ireland and the only one on a golf course. So it was really stunning.
And we had a great match there. And, of course, the spa at Galgorm Castle, which we need to get back to. It has
no
the best
kidding.
Indoor pool. It has the best indoor pool in Ireland. I've experienced a lot of – I love to swim, so I love, you know, swimming in those indoor pools there. And that was pretty spectacular. But there was a lot of news, shifting gears here a little bit, Scott, regarding LIV Golf while we were away. And Henrik Stenson made it sound like, you know, LIV Golf was ready to work it out so that he could do both, play LIV Golf events and captain the European Ryder Cup team. But the powers that be running the Ryder Cup said, absolutely not. So what are your thoughts about Henrik Stenson kind of bolting to LIV Golf?
Well, I wasn't surprised simply because his name had come up originally when the whole LIV Golf concept was talked about. You know, he was one of the first names that everybody talked about. So when he signed to be the Ryder Cup captain, you know, part of that agreement was that he would not join LIV Golf. It was written in the agreement with him. So I don't know what he's so surprised about there. You know, I thought, okay, well, he's at least going to delay going to play LIV until after he's a Ryder Cup captain in 2023 in Italy. But, you know, the money is very enticing. It's really hard for some of these guys, especially guys who are on the decline in their competitive career, like Henrik, to say no to.
Absolutely. And you have both the PGA Tour and the European Tour holding firm on really banning players who go to the Saudi-funded LIV Golf Tour. So do you think there will ever be a meeting of the minds, perhaps a partnership between the two?
I hope that something gets worked out eventually, but I don't think that will ever happen as long as Greg Norman is running the LIV outfit. I just don't think he's a person that can be negotiated with. And the tours are willing to negotiate with him. It's become something personal for him and also in return something personal for the tours against him. But I would like to see them work something out and utilize, you know, what used to be called the silly season for these guys to have the opportunity to play in these big money events but not take away from what we've come to know as a traditional tour because – what I don't like about the LIV events are they're kind of 54-hole exhibitions. There's just no real value in the competition as there is in just a normal PGA Tour or DP World Tour event.
Well, I agree. I just don't think at this point either side wants to compromise and work together. And I can't imagine how they would, as you know, because the formats are so different. And, you know, PGA Tour has been the face of golf. The Saudis have unlimited funds, and I really feel that they want to own and run all of golf. And I think they look like they're intent on almost destroying the PGA Tour. That's the feeling I'm getting.
Yeah, that is a very good way of saying it. And I just don't know right now what the answer is, but I do hope that smarter minds figure something out because it really is damaging golf. This is, you know, it's splitting it in two. And I can't stand that.
I know you've covered the Masters, what, every year for how many years?
Since 97, since Tiger's first win. So
wow.
It's 25.
Wow. So with your experience covering the Masters, how do you think they will proceed regarding letting these, you know, the former Masters champs who are now playing with LIV Golf play in the Masters next April? What's your gut feeling?
My gut feeling is that they won't ban players. I don't think they want to tell, you know, right now five or maybe six at this point, you know, past Masters champions that they can't come to Augusta and they can't have their lifetime exemption and they can't attend the Champions Dinner. I think it diminishes the brand of the Masters. When you start doing that, it diminishes the value of that victory, which really is something that every player aspires to, and it's something that makes the event unique. And so I don't think they'll do that, but I do think they'll tweak their qualification standards so that there is a more emphasis put on PGA Tour and DP World Tour and maybe some other World Tour. Their their traditional tours. So maybe you invite the Order of Merit winners of the Japan and the Australasian and the South African tours. And maybe you start allowing 10 to 15 DP World Tour top race to buy leaders like you do the FedEx Cup leaders. And maybe you put still have a top 50 emphasis, but maybe you only have one deadline instead of two. And you move it later in the year till after the Players' Championship. And so that it puts more emphasis on the early PGA Tour season success. And there's also the Players' Championship. It could be treated like a major in their eyes and give them a five-year exemption for the winner. And top four finishers get a spot, just like you do the U.S. Open, Open Championship, and PGA Championship. So I think there's ways that they can tweak their qualifications to make it harder for someone on LIV to get in and reward the traditional tours.
Absolutely. All great points, Scott. And I know you were at the Open Championship at St. Andrews. And, you know, interesting, Tiger in his press conference put kind of the bug in people's ears saying that it could be a possibility that some of these players, you know, would never be able to play a major championship. What did you think of Tiger's comments?
I thought it was great to hear Tiger really speak out on something like that, because Tiger's always been very reserved. You know, he's been kind of like Michael Jordan, you know, both parties buy shoes, Tiger Woods. He hasn't always wanted to jump off into the deep end on subjects like this. So I thought he's an important voice now in golf. He, you know, his successes get diminished if the tours get diminished. And so I think he's a great voice to have on that. And I think he's right about some of these guys. You know, maybe a guy like Taylor Gooch, who's young and hasn't won a major championship and hasn't had all those experiences that some of the older guys who've jumped to live have. You know, he might be finding himself on the outside looking in. And a lot of these young guys, some young amateurs that they're trying to coax directly onto that tour, well, they might never find themselves in the Masters. So, there's something said to that. I think Tiger knows probably a little bit, too, that maybe these other governing bodies, are going to try something to make it harder for people who are not on traditional tours to get into their majors.
I know you're a golf insider, and have you heard anything more about the rumors about Open champion Cam Smith? Do you think he'll join LIV Golf?
Well, I haven't heard any more on that, but, you know, that's concerning, because now he does have that way into the other majors as of now as a champion. So he's got 5 years exemption at least into some of them. He's got to at least 60 years old into the Open Championship based on their current qualifications. So now he has the freedom to possibly do something like that. I would hate to see guys using winning majors as a launching point to join LIV. That would be very troubling. And I do hope Cam sticks around, because that would be a major loss to the tours.
I think so too. I just so enjoy watching him. He's such an, when he is on, there's no better putter out there. He just
there's
put on
no
a
better short
clinic.
Game in the world.
Yeah,
I mean,
oh
the
my
whole
God.
Thing. That shot he made on 17, the creativity it took, the guts it took to win an Open Championship with a shot like that. I mean, I'm not sure anybody else makes that.
And Rory McIlroy was so close. He played so well, you know, trying to win his first major title since 2014. How do you think this loss, Scott, will affect his psyche? I know he has to be tremendously disappointed. It was just so close, and he played so well.
Exactly. The thing that's got to hurt him is, you know, he didn't really do anything wrong, but as he said, he also didn't really do anything right on Sunday either. He made 36 putts. He hit every green in regulation. He's the first first guy to lead a major through 54 holes and hit every green in regulation in the final round and not win. He has to be a little bit in shell shock at what happened to him. And maybe he was playing with a little tunnel vision, you know, watching Victor Hovland struggle beside him and thinking, you know what, I've got enough cushion on these other guys. Some birdies will fall, and then when he didn't birdie those holes that you expect to birdie, you know, Cam went racing by, you know, like a bullet. It had to be a little bit shocking to him, but I hope that what he realizes is he really did play great golf all week long and just got beat by someone, you know, who pulled a Jack Nicklaus in the final round and shot 30 on the back and 64 on Sunday. Sometimes
Scott,
you just have to tip your hat.
Always a pleasure to catch up. It was short and sweet here. We got to run. But, boy, how much fun it was to really get to know you on this golf trip and play some golf with you and experience Ireland with you and the other, you know, media group. Really appreciate you coming on so early for us this morning.
It was a blast, Dan. Thanks for having me.
My thanks to Scott Michaud, to Charles Meacham, to Ed Arzuman in the studio. Talking Golf with Ann LaGore is brought to you by IB Cool, luxury athleisure apparel for men and women, featuring the exclusive Icefill cooling technology along with SPF 50 plus sun protection. Visit ibkul.com to learn more. Hey, enjoy the golf. You got the 3M Open in Minnesota. Scott Piercy, four shots in front, looking to win his fifth PGA Tour title. You have Brooke Henderson at the Evian Championship in France, looking to win her first major title since 2016. Stay tuned for Rick Wolf and the Sports Edge, and I'll talk with you next Sunday morning right here on Talking Golf with Ann LaGore.